Thanks for the introduction. And today I'm going to talk about our work on data integrity analysis on ZFS. And this work is done in conjunction with Abhishek Rajamvelli and our advisors, Angela Pachitusu and Ramsey Pachitusu. According to the end-to-end argument, ideally, applications should take care of data integrity. But in reality, file systems are the ones in charge. This is because data is usually organized by all kinds of metadata, which are only known by file system. So the file system has to take care of that. And secondly, most applications just rely on file systems and want them to take care of everything. And third, the applications share data. And one application could be reading data generated by another application. So all applications must agree upon a way to verify data integrity. Since we don't want to change the application, a genetic layer is needed, which we think should be the file system. So in the end, in most cases, the file system are practically handling data integrity. And let's take a look at what current file systems do in terms of data integrity. We all know that preserving data integrity is a great challenge because data integrity is usually harmed by both hardware and software faults, such as bit loss on disk media and the bugs in file systems or firmware. So current file systems rely on a lot of techniques to maintain data integrity. For example, different kinds of checksums are used to detect data corruption. And redundancy, especially in the form of RAID, is widely used to provide recovery. So note that all these techniques are designed specifically to handle disk corruption. What about memory? The problem of memory corruption has been studied for a long time. And people used to think there could be tens of memory errors per year per gigabytes. But a recent study from Google showed that the memory error rate could be two orders of magnitude higher than the ones observed in older studies. And even worse, software can also corrupt memory. And whereas all kinds of reports from software bug databases and security databases confirm the existence of such bugs. So most people think that ECC is a good way to handle memory corruption. But we think ECC is not good enough. This is because the most commonly used ECC algorithms can only correct one single bit error. And many commodity systems nowadays do not even have ECC memory due to its high cost. And on the other hand, ECC is a hardware solution, which is not able to handle software-induced memory corruption. So we think with or without ECC, memory corruption would still be a problem to any system. So how does memory corruption affect data integrity? We all know that file system tends to cache a great deal of data in memory. And especially nowadays, as the memory capacity is growing, the chances of in-memory data being corrupted is getting higher. And moreover, the file system may cache data for a long time, which makes it more susceptible to memory corruption. So we're wondering how robust modern file systems are to memory corruption. In order to understand the data integrity problem in terms of disk corruption, and especially on memory corruption, we performed further injection experiments on ZFS, trying to find out what happens when disk or memory corruption occurs, and how likely a bit flip in memory would cause problems. A question you might ask is, why we choose ZFS? Well, we all know that ZFS is a modern file system offering a lot of reliability mechanisms. And the developer claimed that it has provable end-to-end data integrity, which makes it a best fit to our study. And note that we are not picking on ZFS. We are very impressed by the great job ZFS does at disk level. And we know that ZFS is not designed to end memory corruption. We're just curious to see that with so much amazing on disk machinery, what would happen if memory bits get corrupted? So here's our result. So obviously, ZFS is robust to a wide range of disk corruptions. That's what it's designed for. But ZFS fails to maintain data integrity when memory corruption occurs. And in particular, corrupt data could be read from memory or written to disk permanently. And sometimes the whole system crash. And we also show that given that one single bit flip has occurred in memory, there are small but non-negligible chances that these failures would occur. So we see the data integrity at memory level is not preserved. So here is the outline of the rest of the talk. First, I will give some background on ZFS, and then I will present the result of data integrity analysis. And finally, I will close the talk and take questions. In terms of reliability, ZFS offers the following features. First, ZFS uses checksum to detect data corruption. And every block in ZFS is checksummed. Whenever a block is read from disk, the checksum is verified by ZFS. And ZFS stores the checksum in a separate place from a block in a generic block pointer structure. You can see in the picture here, the block checksum is just stored in the block pointer structure. And by using the block pointer structure, ZFS provides replication to blocks. Everyone on this block in ZFS can have up to 3 copies, which are called ditto blocks. So in the block pointer structure, there are actually 3 addresses. And if the block has more than 1 copy, then the rest of the addresses are used to point to a different physical location that holds the copy. And upon checksum mismatch, ZFS will make use of a redundant copy to recover from that corruption. And third, ZFS uses a copy-on-write transaction model to maintain consistency. ZFS never overwrites on-disk data. Instead, it batches up all updates into a transaction group and commit that transaction group in a periodical flush. And the commit either succeeds or fails, which makes the disk image always consistent. And finally, ZFS organizes the physical devices as a storage pool. The devices beneath the storage pool can be configured as a mirror or a new RAID model called RAID-Z, which is designed specifically for ZFS. Okay, so next, I will present our analysis result. First, here is a summary of our disk analysis. This is just for the completeness of our work. And for more details, please see our paper. So the result is ZFS is able to detect all corruptions we injected by using checksums. And in most cases, ZFS makes use of the redundant copies, either on disk or ones cached in memory, to recover from the corruptions. So we see data integrity at the disk level is well preserved. And then I will give some detail on our results of the in-memory analysis. This analysis contains 2 parts. The first part is called random test, in which we basically inject random bit flips to memory and see what kind of failures would occur. And then in a more controlled environment, we perform a controlled test to see why those failures happen. So in a random test, we want to see what kind of failures would occur if memory bits get flipped. And at the same time, we want to figure out how often do those failures happen. So we use the force injection techniques. Basically, we consider each run of a workload as a trial. And in each trial, we start a workload, inject random bit flips, and see if any kind of failure occurs. For each workload, we run a large number of trials. So therefore, for each workload and for each type of failure, the number of trials with such failure divided by the total number of trials is the probability of such failure in the workload. So here's the result. Not surprisingly, bad things do happen. And we have tried 4 workloads from Firebench. They're all run with their default parameters. And depending on workload, the probability of reading corrupt data could be as high as 7%, which means that there is a real chance that users will silently get bad data. And the probability of writing corrupt data is also not low, which means that you might silently commit bad data to disk, and it becomes part of the file system. And of course, occasionally, the system crashes. So note that all these numbers are small, but are not negligible. And we also measured the average amount of page cache consumed by each workload. And we can see that in most cases, the more page cache is consumed, the more likely a failure would occur. So now let's look a little deeper into these results and in a more controlled environment to find out what exactly happened with respect to ZFS. So in a controlled test, our goal is find out why those failures happen with respect to ZFS, and exactly how does ZFS react to memory corruptions. So in the experiment, we are not randomly injecting faults. Instead, we inject bit flips at specified location. For example, for metadata structures, we corrupt them field by field, such that we can perform more detailed analysis on the response of ZFS. And for data blocks cached in memory, we just randomly flip our bit in that data block. And we also use different workloads for different structures. For a global metadata structure, which are usually used to manage file system instances, we exercise the ZFS command. And for file system level metadata and data, we use the POSIX APIs. So here is an overview of our results. First, I'll give some general observations by working through the lifecycle of a block in ZFS. And then I will describe some more specific cases where other things could go wrong. So let's take a look at the lifecycle block in a read case. We have the page cache above the dashed line and the disk below the dashed line. And in the picture, the blue square represents the block we want to read. And the gray square is the block that holds the block pointer, which is pointing to the blue block. And the yellow little square here represents the checksum. Let's say we want to read the blue block. So when a block is being read from disk, ZFS verifies the checksum. It will generate a checksum and compare it with the checksum stored in block pointer. So in this case, it's the same. So the verification succeeds, and the block is placed in page cache. So we see the blocks on disk are actually protected by a checksum. After a while, when a block is staying in the page cache, if a bit is flipped in that block, then any subsequent read of this block will directly get the block from memory without any verification. So the users could get the correct block. So we see the blocks in memory actually not protected because the checksum is only used at disk level. And after a while, the cached copy might be evicted from page cache. Note that as long as the block is in the page cache, it's vulnerable to memory corruptions. And we have no idea how long a block could be staying in page cache. So we see the window of vulnerability is actually unbounded. And then let's talk about the write case. So in the figure, assume that the block we want to write to is already in the page cache. And we write it, it gets updated. And in at most 30 seconds, the periodical flush will start. Assume that the block gets corrupted before the flush starts. And then during the flush, as the block is being written to disk, ZFS will generate a new checksum for that block. And update the block pointer with a new checksum. And then the block gets written to disk. So in this case, the corrupt block is actually written to disk permanently. And even worse, since the block pointer was updated, the block that contains the block pointer must have also been written to disk. Therefore, the corrupt block is actually protected by the new checksum. So any subsequent reads of this block from disk will actually pass the checksum verification, and the users silently get bad data. And similar to a read case, the block might be evicted from page cache in some time. So note that all these observations apply to both metadata and data blocks in the page cache. If data blocks get corrupted, the users will see bad data, which explains why we get bad data in a random test. And on the other hand, if metadata structures are corrupted, ZFS might blindly trust those structures and cause more problems. And I will show three specific cases in the next couple of slides. And all of them happens when metadata structures get corrupted. So in the first case, we show that we can also get bad data when metadata structure is corrupted. So this picture shows the physical layout of a file in ZFS. The green node called D node It's similar to inodes in other file systems, which is used to organize on-disk blocks. And the gray square represents indirect blocks, which are for block pointers. And the blue square at the leaf level represents the data block. All these blocks are connected by block pointers, and they form a block tree rooted at the dnode. There is a field called DNN levels in the dnode, which is the height of the block tree. So in this case, it should be 3. Let's say we want to read the block 0, which is the first data block at leaf level. And if this field is correct, ZFS will start from dnode and follows a series of block pointers until it gets to leaf level and return the correct block to the user. But if one bit of this field is corrupted, which makes it from 3 to 1, then ZFS will think this block tree has only one level. So it will treat the indirect block as data block 0 and return that indirect block to the user. So users silently get bad data. Note that in this case, even though there is no data blocks being corrupted, the users can still get corrupt data. And the second case is a crash case. So let's use the same file, and we want to read data block 0 from the same file. And if this DNN levels field is correct, ZFS will return the correct block to the user. But one, another bit of this field is corrupted, which makes it from 3 to 7. And then ZFS will think this tree has 7 levels. So when it gets to the leaf level, it tries to get an invalid block pointer from the data block and tries to follow that block pointer to get to the next level, which actually doesn't exist. And later in the code path, a null pointer is dereferenced, which causes a crash. Let's look at some code snippets to understand why the crash happens. Say, after ZFS gets the block pointer, here BP is block pointer, which is now invalid. When it tries to get the block size of that block, then because the block pointer is already invalid, this size could be an arbitrarily large value. And when ZFS calls into zero buff alloc, size is shifted and becomes a new variable called C. And by looking at this assertion here, C should be less than 256. But now C could be much larger than that. And then using C to index into a global array called zero buff cache could give us a null pointer. Note that in this case, the assertion should have caused this kind of error. But the assertion is disabled after code is shipped. So the error slipped through. And finally, since CP is already null, CCP could also be null. And then this null pointer gets dereferenced, causing a crash. Note that we're not saying that this is the only cause of the crash we have seen in a random test. This is just one example showing that when metadata structure in file system gets corrupted, we could also get system crash. And the third case is operation fail, which we didn't see in a random test. See, we want to open a file. And there is a field in the file's metadata called zp flags, which is used to store additional attributes of that file. See, if we have all access rights to that file and this flag is correct, the open will succeed. But if one bit, and specifically the 41st bit of this field, is flipped from 0 to 1, we get denied. And the reason is that the 41st bit of this flag actually means that the current file is quarantined by some antivirus software. So when we try to access it, ZFS will check the flag, and if this specific bit is on, it will return the EXS error code. So note that this is just one example of the operation fail, and you can find more examples in our paper. So here's a summary of our in-memory analysis. So we have shown that the blocks in memory are not protected because the checksums is only used at disk boundary. And not just data, metadata is also critical and sensitive to memory corruptions. we have shown that one single bit flip would cause all kinds of failures, such as the bad data is returned, the system crashes, or operations fail. Therefore, we say the data integrity at this memory level is not preserved. Okay, let's make some conclusions here. We'll know that disk can fail and memory can also fail. However, we have been focusing on only half of the equation. And for all these years, we have developed a lot of techniques to handle disk failure, but little has been done on memory corruptions. Our study shows that memory corruption do cause problems, such as corrupt data is read from memory or written to disk, and system crash or operation fail. And not just ZFS, we also did some preliminary analysis on EX2, and we find similar problems. And we can imagine that the more file system we look into, the more problems we might get. And it seems to us that no matter how complex a file system is, and no matter how much disk protection a file system provides, memory corruption could still be a problem. Therefore, we cannot just focus on disk reliability and forget about the other half. So we ask ourselves, should we protect data and metadata from memory corruption? And that's all. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dominic from Apple. In the workloads that you ran, you didn't mention how many bit flips you introduced to produce that rate of errors. Can you talk about that?
Sure. A couple of slides here. So specifically, in a random test, we're trying to find out, like, for a given workload, given that like one random bit is flipped, the probability of such failure scenarios. And we are considering these four scenarios, which is a reading corrupt data, writing corrupt data, crash, and everything's fine. So this kind of the timeline of our each trial. And so first, at time zero, we start a workload. And then after some time, when the workload is in like a stable state, we inject one bit flip. And then we see if any kind of failure occurs. And after some time, we stop the workload. So, and then we repeat n trials. And if we get like nx trials in which the failure of x occurs, then we can calculate the probability by dividing nx by n. Actually, this is the ideal case in which every time we inject one bit flip. So the problem is we're using a machine with 2 gigabytes memory. And if you just flip one bit, the chances that it might affect the workload is very low. And we have to try a large number of trials in order to observe enough number of failure. Therefore, instead of one bit flip, we inject k bit flips at a time. Therefore, and then we measure the probability of such failures when k bit flips has occurred. And then we do some math to convert the pkx to p1x, which is the probability given that one bit flip has occurred. So that's how we did the random test and get the probability values.
So I want to ask that last question a different way, mm-hmm. which is, how does your rate of bit flip injection match mm-hmm. to the observed rates of bit failures from the recent studies?
Well, actually, we didn't do that. So in an experiment, we just want to show that, like, given that any like one bit has been flipped, what kind of failure could happen, and how likely those kind of failure would occur.
Yeah, so, and I guess the question is, given the reality of how frequently bit failures happen, mm-hmm. a question that would be really interesting was, then in a workload that runs, when data's in memory for an hour, what mm-hmm. is my probability that I would actually have a corruption?
Well, actually, you can use like the probability values we got from our experiments and times that value and use that value to and multiply that value by like the memory error rate in reality. That should give you like a basic sense of how these things work.
Again from IBM. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering when you would stop worrying about data or memory corruption. Would you feel the need to check metadata every time you used it? Would you need to check the data that users see after it gets into their buffers? And why didn't you worry about memory flips in the code? I mean, the code's in the same memory. Why would it be immune to the same problems?
Well, actually, from what I've seen, when you run workload, the size of page cache could be as high as like 50% of the total amount of memory. So we think that the actual data in memory are more vulnerable to memory corruption than the code. Does that answer the question?
No, it doesn't, because the effects of a piece of code that is examining everything that goes through the buffer pool is probably more serious.
Well, if we really care about like the code, probably we should do some like more strong, consistent check on the metadata.
All right. I'm really wondering, the question was beating around the bush. Why do you think the file system is the entity that should be responsible for keeping, ensuring memory integrity?
You mean?
As opposed to, say, the hardware.
Well, I've already shown that. So ECC is only a hardware solution, right? So like nowadays, we're using programming languages like C. So the programmers can easily make mistakes by dereferencing the pointer and write some random values to it. So in this case, if we want to prevent some like software-induced memory corruptions, we need some more high-level techniques to protect memory.
Okay, thank you.
Ajay Gulati from VMware. So most of the server class memories, they are already protected by ECC, which would detect and correct single bit errors. And on some multi-bit errors, it would notify you, so it would get an interrupt at least. So in those cases, do you think it would help to take some other action rather than letting the write go through all the way to the disk? And do you think that would improve the memory reliability of these systems, where you would at least get a notification of error and then you do something about it? Are you looking into that?
Well, actually, in that case, if we can get some notification from the hardware, I think we can modify the file system, maybe like add some functionality there so that it can further inform the user or retry the writing to the disk until it gets the correct data.
Okay, so you think file system designers should be worried about this and they should have mechanisms to handle bad memory and saying either we should fail the operation or we won't do the write?
Yeah, we basically need like a new interface.
Okay, thank you.
Bill Belosky from Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So presumably if you're going to try to write a file system that solved a problem like this, you're going to at some point put in a checksum check. Mm-hmm. And given that you can have arbitrary memory corruptions, it can never be late enough, right? And so you could make an argument that says, well, the later you put the check, the smaller the window of vulnerability is. But do you have a feel for whether the corruptions that you see in memory are related to load, because you're going to be busy while you're cache hitting and maybe not busy when you're idle. So can you assume a uniform probability distribution? I'm not sure if I'm going to do this through. If you do your checksum check 10 times closer to the actual final use of the data, should I believe that I'm then going to catch 90% of the errors? Or do you understand what I'm saying?
I think that's a good point. So actually, like, maintaining data integrity is basically trying to minimize the possibility of data being corrupted. Mm-hmm. So like as soon as you like generate the checksum or re-verify the checksum, I think the probability of those kind of those data being corrupted should be much lower.
Okay. So but I guess what I'm trying to ask is, should I believe that the errors are going to happen when the system is busy, or they're going to happen when they're random? If you're having run down a bad pointer errors, then you're probably statistically much more likely to corrupt the thing while you're doing something than when you're sitting idle. And while you're doing something is also while you're reading the data. So I'm trying to get a feel for how much better I could make it by pushing this checksum verification later on the read side. The write side's maybe a little bit easier because it's a lazy writer thing that's writing it back. Maybe you don't have the, I mean, you probably don't have the data for this because it's, right, that wasn't your study, but. I mean, maybe the answer is we need to get the Google guys to give us better data about whether memory corruption errors
were. Probably we need more data.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thanks.